This is Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars with Trevor Long and Stephen Fenwick. Thanks to NRMA Insurance and Uniden.
That's us, Trevor Long, Stephen Fenwick, with you once again. Thanks to NRMA Insurance, helping over 3 million people across Australia protect the things they care about. And Uniden Smart Dash Cams, not just Canstar Blue 5-star rating across all categories, but stunning new 5K resolution 60-plus model available now in the Dash View range. Get on it from Uniden. Stephen Fenwick, good day to you.
G'day, Trev. Yeah, a lot to talk about today. Some news in the EV world.
Bit of news.
I like this. Our first story is about two quite big car companies coming together to form an EV strategy. We're talking about Nissan and Honda.
Yeah, and look, to be clear, it's not unusual for two car companies to get together and do things. I remember as a kid, Holden and Toyota had a partnership because you could get the Holden, I think it was called the Nova, which was a Toyota Camry, and you could buy a Toyota Lexan, which was a Holden Commodore.
Because that was named after Ben Lexan.
Holden was making these family cars, and Toyota didn't have those, so they kind of bought the Commodore as a Lexan.
Okay.
And then I know that I think it might be Renault and Mitsubishi, or it might even be Renault and Nissan, but there's other car companies that have these kind of back-end allegiances, and that's what it appears to be the case here. Nissan and Honda have come together and said, look, we're looking into. So to be clear, it's a memorandum of understanding. It's a way of saying we are investigating whether or not it's best for us to work together on these things.
So which is a study of the strategy, to create a strategy.
Around electrification and intelligence.
Right.
Now, that says to me, obviously EVs, but also autonomous driving and things like that.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, it's Honda and Nissan, for that case, haven't really done much in the EV space, but some hybrid.
So
I think they've got some
hybrid.
Hybrid
stuff. Nissan's got the Leaf. They're one of the original electric cars, right?
Yeah.
But they've definitely got another EV. I think it's the Aiya or something. It starts with A. Like, they've got this space, but for a company that was so early into the range with the Leaf, and it was the OG of electric cars, especially in Australia, it was a $50,000 EV from the get-go.
Yeah.
Like, good value for an EV. But funnily enough, they haven't done much more. And I think that's because their brand strategy changed so dramatically in Australia to go towards the SUV.
Yes.
You know, the Patrol, the Qashqai, the Pathfinder, all those models, they are all about the family SUV and bigger. And electrification just hasn't really been a big part of that. Like and the price of electrification of those really drives it away.
Like, I think in Honda, I think my wife used to drive a CRV. She loved that car, the Honda. And they're quite a respected brand here in Australia.
My mum's Honda Civic went, it was 1995.
Just goes forever.
And I think it lasted way more than 10 years, 900,000 Ks.
Whoa.
Like, she put some Ks on that thing and it was a great car.
Yeah.
And the only reason we got rid of it was she needed something a bit taller because she was getting older.
Yeah.
She needed something easy to get into because Civic was quite low. But I think it's fascinating because and I'll read from the press release, to further accelerate efforts towards carbon neutrality, obviously, the EV space, and zero traffic accident fatalities, which is something Volvo talks about a lot, but you don't hear it from a lot of other companies.
It's a lot to commit to, but that to me, that's kind of not only safety features, but more autonomous driving and taking the human error out of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, the Volvo commitment is something very similar, and they've put a date to it. Like, no new Volvo by a certain
time.
They
said that years ago.
We'll have fatal accidents.
I'm
clearly making a balls up of how that was worded, but it was a big claim at the time, and I think that's the kind of claim we want from companies. But
absolutely right.
I think it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out.
So the president and the CEO, so Makoto Uchida, I'll read his quote here. It's important to prepare for the increasing pace of transformation in mobility in the mid to long term. It's significant that we have reached this agreement based on a mutual understanding that Honda and Nissan face common challenges. We look forward to further discussions and aim to find win-wins for sustainable growth.
Very nice.
Boom.
Well, keep your eyes out, folks, for a Nissan and a Honda that look the same and have the same underpinnings. Like another example, Toyota and Subaru. The Toyota 86, little sports car, Subaru BRZ, exact same car, just different badges.
Yep.
Toyota Supra is actually the same car as the BMW Z4, I think it is. They just, created a different car on top.
Yeah,
so they work together to develop a module.
Yep.
Whereas this is a little bit more detailed because you could imagine their intelligence goes into any Nissan and into any Honda. It might not be just the same platform. So
absolutely
fascinating stuff. Now, the other news this week, which is probably the biggest news in EVs for a little while, especially given what we talked about a week or two ago with the new vehicle emissions policy from the Australian federal government through Chris Bowen. An electric version of the Isuzu D-Max has been revealed and locked in for Australia. Now, for context, I think it's really important that we refresh ourselves. The top 10 cars sold in Australia in February last year were the Ford Ranger, 5,300, Toyota Hilux, 4,400, the Model 3, and in number four was the Isuzu D-Max, 2,941 sold. So they are selling in big numbers. It is an important category because, as you can see there, three of the top four cars are utes.
Yeah.
And it is also important because Isuzu is one of the companies singled out by a lot of reporting to suffer under this new vehicle emissions policy because they have nothing to offer in terms of efficient vehicles. So for them to come out and say, rightio, it's on. The D-Max EV is coming. It'll launch in Norway, and then it will come to Australia.
It was announced, I think it was at the Bangkok International Motor Show, and it was also, you're saying that the timing of this, it's going to hit mainland Europe. So Australia, we probably won't get it to what, 2026?
2026. Yeah. They're saying Norway first in 2025, and then they'll go to right-hand drive for the UK, Australia and Thailand, because Thailand's probably where it's made, I would guess. And we're looking at more like 2026. But that probably works towards the strategy. Yeah. But you made a point to me in looking, and we're just looking at the reporting of this, but you made a point to me about one potential issue that you identified in this from the get-go, which is the battery size.
Yeah, the battery size is, well, if this is accurate, 66.9 kilowatt battery, which that's less than my Tesla. I had a 75D in
my
car.
My Cupra has a 77 kilowatt hour.
So I'm that's my concern
here. Now,
Cupra
is a
full EV, not a hybrid. This
as
is
I
full
understand,
EV.
It's a full EV. So my Cupra is a small, lightish, other than the battery car, and I get 500 k's plus range from it from a 77 kilowatt hour battery.
Yeah.
You bring a ute here that's big, load bearing.
Yes.
And tow capable.
One ton payload.
And with a 66 kilo, oh, mate, that's going to have a 300 kilometre range at best.
Yeah.
Surely.
Well, is the view, or how like you that are views today, I know people drive long distances in them, but it's the workhorse. It's supposed to be taken at the job site and the building site and doing these short trips.
Which in reality, I think this is, I'll tell you what this is. This is one of those moments where you go, rightio, and your son is an awesome example.
Yeah.
Aaron's got a Hilux, right?
Yeah.
Driven around Australia in it. Wouldn't be a contemplation in an electric car. I get that.
No.
But now put that car into its work mode.
Yeah.
When you drive, where you're chippy, you drive to a site, back.
That's it.
There's no way you need more than 300 k's range.
Not at all.
In a day, let alone possibly a week.
Yeah.
You know, so I think I'd love to hear from tradies. I'd love to hear from people who use a ute outside of the long road trips, okay? Let's just ignore that for a moment, which I know is silly, but I want to understand the usage of a ute in its weekly performance. So I don't care if you include the weekend family sport drop-offs and all that kind of stuff.
Like weekend, because you buy a ute, and how popular they are in Australia. Buy a ute not just to work in, you buy it to go camping on the weekend or do other stuff.
And even camping.
Yeah.
How often are you driving more than 150 k's to go camping? Like, this is what I want to understand.
I don't know. I don't do much camping.
Because if that's twice a year for you, then I think we can find a compromise that says that's fine.
Yeah.
If you're going past Newcastle to camp, charge at Newcastle.
You can make it.
Then you drive on to your camp and you charge on the way back.
Fair.
But it's really, for me, it's the day-to-day job site 5 days a week, and then it's the family truck on the weekend.
Mm.
What are your k's in a day?
Yeah.
And I wonder whether 300 is perfectly fine and whether we're overplaying this. But the problem for Isuzu is that's what people are going to talk about. Range.
Unless their battery is is way more efficient, or, you know, we don't know their 66.9 kilowatt battery could be the equivalent of a 75 or a 90 in other vehicles.
Yeah, it could
be. We don't know that. But I'm hoping there's no trade-off here.
Yeah.
You don't want a trade-off. You want to buy this thing and know that it can deliver on everything a ute can do, but also give you a decent amount of range as well.
Let us know what you think about an all-electric ute. It is something that has been – it's a political football too, because it's been talked about by prime ministers of past and present.
Yeah.
It's an important thing for the Australian market, and also, Stephen, to drive – competition too. Ford's going to have,
say, yeah, Ford's going to have a plug-in
hybrid by
yeah.
the end of next year.
Yeah, definitely.
Which won't do bugger all, except for make it slightly more efficient. But yeah. you know, so I think BYD's got their plug-in hybrid coming. So we are going to see a shift in the next 5 years in a big way.
Do you think this is kind of one of the last frontiers for EV? Like you've got your 100%. Passenger cars. I mean, this was kind of the area where you think, how are you going to convince a Ute driver to drive an EV?
Yeah.
Are we seeing the start of this last frontier?
And the way you do it is you put them side by side on a drag strip. You put them side by side on dirt with acceleration. Those things will convince some. In the same way that when we first got Teslas, we did those little acceleration tests and we had people smile. When you see a tradie, you can see it now. I can see it now.
Yeah.
Dash cam, like GoPro, high vis passenger.
And go, whoa.
Just, whoa. Like, you know what I mean? Knock the hard hat off his head.
Yeah. I've got one last question.
Yeah.
Is the Cybertruck considered a ute?
It would be.
Not that it's coming to Australia. I think it is a ute.
It is a dual cab ute.
What do they call it? A utility vehicle.
It's a
America,
stupid piece of junk is what it is. All right.
You know what? I just on that real quickly, I have been reading a lot of funny things about Cybertrucks and how people are like endangering their lives when they see one on the road. They're trying to film it while they're driving, like it's causing issues.
I'm glad they're not in Australia for that reason and many more. Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars. We've got a big show also. We're going to talk to another EV perspective buyer this week. And later in the show, we're going to talk about the fastest electric car you could imagine from Ford. Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars, Trevor Long, Stephen Fenwick, and great to have your company here on the show, brought to you by NRMA Insurance and Uniden Dash Cams. Now, Stephen, we love hearing from our listeners. We've seen plenty of comments online. We get emails now and then, and we've spoken to a few people who own EVs.
People that have already taken the plunge.
There's been a couple of Tesla owners, and I think last week we spoke to Robert, the BYD. Yep. But this week, Malcolm got in touch, and he's on the line because he is in the market for an EV, and he joins us now. G'day, Malcolm.
G'day, Trev. How you doing?
Yeah, really good, mate. Now, tell us where you sit in this space. You don't own an EV yet, but you're very keen.
No, I've been ready to press the button for about 3 or 4 months now, but just haven't done so. For a whole range of reasons. One, primarily because I hear there's a new an update to the Model Y coming out shortly, so I've probably been waiting to see what that looks like. But I've just been a bit tempted in the last week or so that Polestar's now got an offer on their vehicles that's up to 10 grand off, so that's looking pretty attractive at the moment.
Yeah.
So if you had to make a choice, mate, would it be the Tesla then or the Polestar? And you're referring to the design upgrade that the Model 3 went through, so you're waiting for that to come to the Model Y. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. There's a reported update called the Highland, which is due out for the Model Y. But they've said that it's not out in the US until next year.
Yeah.
But they haven't made any comments regarding
that. That means it'll be out here long after that.
Actually, no, but the Model 3 update came pretty quickly globally.
Yeah, it did too.
Because essentially it's all factories update. But I think, here's the thing, right? The Model Y, I 100% wouldn't buy one on looks today anyway. So I think I'd wait for the update because I do think the Model 3 looks 200% better in the new update, right? So you have to assume that the front end of the Y is going to look less bubbly because of those headlights being brought down like the Model 3.
Yeah.
Does design, is that an impact on you though? Do you think that's enough to sway you towards the Model Y?
Look, you know, the design is important. And I think what sort of pushes me towards the Model Y at the moment rather than the Polestar, and I also, you know, had a look at the Kia EV6, the Model Y is probably more of an SUV, which I've been used to driving.
Yep.
I currently have a ute, so that's got nothing to do with it. But I've been driving SUVs now for several years, you know, an Audi Q5 and that type of thing. So the Y is more akin to that type of vehicle. And also the seating height of the Y, I think, is a bit higher than the Star.
Mm.
So, and I think the EV6, you know, whilst I've driven that, it's an impressive vehicle.
Yep.
It's a Kia, and it doesn't look all that much different to the petrol version of that vehicle.
I've driven the EV6. We actually spoke about it on the show last week. I really like that car. There's a lot of EVs. I've also driven the Volvo, I think the XC40.
XC40 is a not bad one to look
at as well. That's a nice SUV as well. But is there so you rather have a higher ride height? Is that why you're looking at SUVs, or you just prefer that shape of car?
Yeah, no, probably a higher ride height. Primarily just because I've had my back fused and just getting in and out of a sedan is probably going to be a bit more difficult for me now.
Right.
Even though I must say that Polestar have offered to drive one around to my place. I live down on the Moon Peninsula.
Yeah.
They've offered to drive one around for me to see if I can fit into it or not.
Yeah.
They're desperate, mate. They're dead keen. Look at them.
At the moment.
They're keen to make a sale there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Good. Well, that's good. You know what? I respect that.
That's big
great.
Time.
Yeah,
that's good. And I think, Malcolm, even though you're in the SUV desire, you've got to respect a company that's you know, actually pushing for you and actually not in a sales pushy way, but in quite a supportive way. The ability to
practical.
Say, we'll bring it to you and have a look at it, I think that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, I must say, you know, I've been. Of the three experiences at the dealership, the Polestar was by far the best.
Interesting.
And then Lexus was next, and Kia really, you know, that was a very underwhelming experience.
Yeah,
in fact, so underwhelming that I actually wrote Kia head office a letter afterwards just saying, mate, now if you want to sell a $90,000 car, you need to offer a better level of service.
Isn't that fascinating? Because I've bought two Kias and had pretty horrible experiences at the dealerships.
Yeah.
I think that's a really sad indictment on Kia because let me tell you, they make beautiful cars, right? So, and you know, the other thing I was going to say was later in the year, I think it'll drop this year, maybe early next year, the Kia EV5, which is a smaller but big SUV.
Did you get a response to your letter or have you only just sent it?
No, I sent it a few weeks ago and, you know, I just got the typical response. So, we'll hand it on to the department and let them handle it.
Man, that's disappointing.
You know, if that's your response, mate, I'm really worried about your company.
Yeah. You mentioned Lexus in there, Malcolm. What were you looking at there?
I haven't actually had a look at the Lexus.
Because they make good hybrids.
But my understanding of the Lexus is that their range isn't as good as the others. Mm. And range is really important for me, seeing I live down on the peninsula, because it's, you know, 60 or 80 Ks before I get into the city. And then if I want to go anywhere north of the city, it's plus that.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
I like that you've got specific needs for the car, range, you want an SUV. I think that's going to make it it's going to make it easier for you to find the perfect car, the perfect EV for yourself.
Yeah. And, you know, I guess the thing that attracts me about the Polestar is, you know, it seems to be a lot better resolved inside. It's more like a car than a Tesla.
100%.
Bit better finish, you know, it feels a bit more luxurious, like you're getting value for money.
Are you going to get buyer's remorse if you get the Polestar on a great deal and then the Model Y comes out looking spectacular at the end of the year?
I'd throw myself off a cliff, mate.
Come on. But then the big question is, can you wait? How long can you wait? You said you've only just kind of come to the market in the last couple of months. What's your potential wait time?
Oh, look, you know, if they said the Model Y upgrade was coming out, you know, late in the year, November, December, I'd easily wait.
Right.
Okay.
But, what's the chances of that, mid next year. It just depends on who you listen to. You know, there's all these YouTube videos saying that, you know, it's imminent.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're probably not worth the paper they're not printed on.
Because like Model Y has only been in 18 months in Australia? Is it two years already?
But it's been around for longer than that. Therefore, it's very much overdue for a facelift.
Okay.
I worry for you, mate, because I do think there is a chance the Model Y will come this year. I do think the Polestar, mate, if you're getting a great deal, and I know no one with a Polestar 2 that doesn't love it.
Yeah.
Is that
the model Polestar 2 you're looking at?
Yeah, that's coming out sort of around the middle of the year, but it ends up being substantially more expensive.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
Be over 100K.
Okay,
similar spec.
Okay.
Look, I think the challenge you've got is it is a sedan, it is low down. If you've got those back issues, then you need to decide how much of an issue that's genuinely going to be for you. Because despite the fact that it's a great deal and a great car, if you are
you
at
don't
a
want
point
to struggle.
Where you need
you don't
it.
Want to struggle with that.
Yeah.
It's something you're going to be driving every day. You don't want to struggle with that.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think that's probably going to be the deciding factor.
I think you're going to end up with the Model Y. I would encourage you to find another way to experience the EV6 again, because I do think the Kia is a beautiful car. Even Stephen was super impressed by it.
I was like, I'm not a little guy, so getting in and out of a car is it's important to me as well. And I found the EV6 very comfortable to get in and out of, and didn't seem too low to the ground. Like my car, I've got an EQE 350, which is like my wife describes riding, sitting on the road. But with the EV6, it was substantially higher and easier to get into.
And so, look, I don't know whether Aaron, who's listening and hooked me up, is the kind of guy that's going to now chase after all these individuals looking for cars. Ooh. But hey, if he is and he gets in touch, I'll send him on to you, and that's a different experience for the dealer. But let me ask you this, Malcolm, and you know you're at your own desires there, and I think we've landed on a place where the Polestar is a great car, but probably not for you because of your back issues. But I just want to know quickly and finally, in that moment, what is it that got you to this point? A few months ago, what was the thing that said, "Rightio, it's time for an EV"?
Oh, look, to be honest, probably, you know, I drive a Mazda BT50 ute at the moment, primarily because we moved down to the Mornington Peninsula during COVID and bought a small farm. So I thought, well, I've got a farm, I need a ute. And then, you know, sort of after the first 3 or 4 months, I actually realised that the number of times I actually use it as a ute is probably, you know, half a dozen times a year where I could just go and hire a ute at Bunnings for those times. Yeah. And the rest of the time, you know, I'm just driving a truck and it's not all that enjoyable to drive. So I just thought, you know, I should get something, you know, new. And, you know, my sons are very keen on the environment and that. So I thought I'd do the right thing and get an EV.
Lovely.
Fantastic.
Well, the most important thing, Malcolm, is we want to know what you end up doing.
Yes, so keep in touch with us, please.
I do think there's a little weight involved if you're going to stick it out for the Model Y, because I tell you right now, you talk about jumping off a cliff if you buy the Polestar, then the Model Y. I'd not be happy at all if I bought a Model Y today and then within a year it looks a million times better. And judging by what they did with the Model 3, there's no way it's not going to be a better looking car.
Yeah, no, that's what I understand as well. Basically, everything they've done to the Model 3, they're going to do to the Y.
Makes sense.
Plus, potentially, a new battery technology as well.
For sure.
Well, good luck in your buying experience, Malcolm, and we'll welcome you on the EV journey when it happens, mate.
Well, thanks, guys. Really appreciate the call and love the show. Well, love all your shows, actually, but the EV one in particular, because it's obviously of keen interest to me at the moment.
Good on you, mate. We appreciate you getting in touch. Thanks, Malcolm.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers, mate. And, you know, it's fascinating because what is that tipping point? Like, what's the tipping point to bring you into an EV space? And
for Malcolm, when you're ready to pull the trigger.
It wasn't about, you know, it's time to do good for the environment, even though the kids are good with it. It's just really the car that I've got today doesn't suit me. And he's obviously already had that little bent in his head that my next car will be an EV. And I think there's a lot of people that think my next car will be
could
the
be.
EV.
Well, I think, you know, you think about when you buy a car, it's not something you're going to just keep for a year. You're going to keep it for a while. So it's a lot of thought goes into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good on you, Malcolm. And if you've got a question about EVs, you own an EV, you hate EVs, we don't care. It doesn't matter what it is. If you've been in my Facebook comments about my new car, please call up.
Yeah.
Because, geez, there's some narcs.
I've had them in mine too, mate.
The best one is the people. So, you know, I posted a photo of the new Kia and, I'm an excited new father, basically, right? And, yeah, most people are like, awesome, love it, or they have an opinion on the look. But then you get these people who, like one bloke put a map of Australia with a drawing of, you know, the great lap that you take in a, you know, diesel Prado, I guess, or something like that, going, can't wait for you to drive around Australia. All right, mate, whoever said I was going to drive around Australia? Like, what are you talking about? And then other people are like, well, you know, this car's not good for the environment. I'm like, I never said anything about it being good for the environment.
Yeah.
I just think it's a bloody good-looking car.
Man, I get the narcs who just keep saying, oh, watch out, it's going to catch fire. Yeah. I get those idiots in my comments too.
Yeah. Shout out to my Uncle Pete. Who, in that very same thread I've just been reminded, said, very nice, Trevor. By the way, love Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars. Keep up the good work. And I'm like, oh, someone in the family's listening. I'm in trouble.
Did you remind him we've got 8 other podcasts you can listen to as well, or what?
Two Blokes Talking Tech Guide, EFTM, The Best Movies You've Never Seen, and The Private Feed if you want something.
Yeah,
actually,
come on, Trev.
Uncle Pete, don't listen to that one.
Come on, Pete. Yeah, The Private, maybe. We shouldn't have family listening to The Private Feed. Yeah,
definitely don't let Arnie Val listen to that one. Anyway, you're listening to Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars.
Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars is proudly supported by Uniden, and they've just released the Uniden Dashview 60 Plus. This is their first 5K resolution dash cam. 5K, even more detail, 150-degree wide-angle front-facing camera as well. It's got the Sony Starvis sensor. That means a lot because it works well during the day, during the night, all types of lighting conditions. That's the whole idea of having a dash cam, so I can record everything that happens on the road, and now in 5K resolution. So check that out, the Dash View range. There are others. There's also the iGo Cam range as well. Uniden has got you covered on the road for all your dash cam needs.
Now, Stephen, I know you love your motorsport. You are a rev head.
Not as much as you.
No, that's true. Stephen's a football fan, but has dabbles and, and was at the Formula One Grand Prix on the weekend.
Yes, I was.
So enjoyed a bit of the rev head while I watched from the Trevor Long stand at home on the Hisense 100-incher. But someone that is down in Melbourne and has been in Australia with a very special motor vehicle is from Ford Performance Racing. It's Senior Manager of Formula One and EV Demonstrators, and that's Sri Packham, and he's on the line right now. G'day, Sri. How are you doing?
I am doing great. How are you guys doing?
Going well.
Really, really well. You are here in Australia with a vehicle. This is an electric vehicle podcast, and I've got to be honest, I never thought we'd be talking about a vehicle here that's setting lap records around Mount Panorama. Tell us about the super van.
Well, and I bet you never thought that it would be a van, right? That's setting all
those records. Definitely not.
I mean, you could stack a couple of GT cars and get the same frontal area as this van. That's the crazy part about it. It's taking this thing that you never expect would do all of this, you know, racetrack work or burnouts or, you know, high performance driving, and then just subverting that paradigm and, you know, going out and shattering lap records. That's the fun of it.
What's the purpose of a vehicle like this? Because the Supervan itself has been around for many, many generations. It's iterated over the years into what it is today. Has it always been a demonstration vehicle for Ford, or what's its purpose in the fleet?
So I think it's evolved over time, right? We first did one in 1971, and at the time it was a, you know, GT40 engine in it. And since then, we've had Formula One powertrains in it, and really, back then, it was a demonstrator that showcased our involvement in all these cool motorsports and tying it to a product that people can buy on the roads. And it's very, very popular, obviously. The Transits are great products that millions of people use.
So
we're doing is we've, again, instead of that same formula from before, you know, loosely, it is the same formula, a high-performance powertrain in a vehicle that people are able to buy. But we've gone fully electric this time. So it's four electric motors, 2,000 horsepower. And the difference this time is we're actually going and setting lap records with it. We took on Pikes Peak. Now I've taken on Bathurst. And, you know, we have other plans for it, too. So it's a little more serious this time in terms of going after actual lap records.
Right. So are we talking this is the sort of the bedrock potentially of upcoming Ford EVs, passenger EVs, that people can buy in the near future?
Well, I think it's hard to draw a straight line from, hey, this is what you'll be able to buy.
Yeah.
The key behind all of these EV demonstrators, I mean, I have like a lot of EV demonstrators in my portfolio now. And they're all different flavors of technological exploration. With this, you're getting very high performance cells in there. You're getting motor technology. How do you cool both of those things and cool it in a way that's efficient and keeps the thing running the whole time and you don't have derates? It's all those sorts of details. You're playing with cathode and anode chemistry for different circuits, for instance. Mm. It's those sorts of details that feed back into what we do on the production vehicle. So you won't actually have the exact van going out there, but the technology that we're pushing this thing, that is certainly going to make its way back. And we already have a few things that we're pushing back into the production side from it.
Because if you look at something like the even the e-transit van, I drove a few weeks ago, the e-transit van, and I took it on a 1,000-kilometre road trip, which was a bit silly, I'll be honest with you. But if you then look at that and go, okay, so what do we learn from the current vehicle on the road? And what have we learned in all these demonstrators? Are things like getting the best range and the best, I guess, efficiency from a battery, even though you're pushing this one to its limits, there's still benefits learned from just battery efficiency in the same way that racing cars, you know, Formula One cars, GT cars over the years have led to fuel efficiency benefits for road cars.
Correct. Yep. It's the exact same way, right? You're pushing all of these technologies to their limit. And aerodynamics is another great example of it, right? These are all things that you are pushing to the limit. Now, they may not be the exact same type of limit that a production vehicle would need, but as you're pushing things to the limit, you learn a lot of things about your tools, your processes, your ways of analyzing things, your engineer's experience. All of those things are invaluable because those methods are then taken and applied to a production vehicle. So it may not be literally the same exact body style that you transfer over, but it's all of the engineering that goes in behind it. You are honing and sharpening that in a way that only competition can allow you to do.
So where do you think we're going to see the most improvement in EVs? Where is it going to really get a lot better? Is it the battery? Is it the motor? What do you think, looking into your crystal ball, what are we going to look at?
100% batteries.
Yeah.
100% batteries. I mean, aero already, you know, we've given not just us, right, everybody's experience with competition aero, it's been a huge boon for the EVs. You look across us and other companies, right? It's all very highly competitive engineers from the motorsport sphere who've tended to make a difference on the aero side. And similarly, motors, right? People pushing the limits on things allow you to make those incremental improvements that translate to range.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But batteries are definitely the next frontier. I mean, there's so much work going on in that, and we haven't crack the code yet, right?
That's
there's
wild.
A lot more work to be done.
So that is to say that the work that will exist in batteries over the next 5 to 10 years probably will lead to an EV, a second boom essentially, which will see better range, better efficiency, better lifespan. Are those the kind of things that we need from batteries going forward?
Yeah, you need better range, better energy density, really.
Okay.
So you don't have something that's as heavy, but doesn't give you as much energy, mm-hmm. right? And you want to get that metric up. And all of that comes down to chemistry, mm-hmm. right? A lot of battery chemistry is involved in this. And that's where some of our demonstrators are useful. They give us learnings that you wouldn't otherwise come across or find until you try to compete and push these things to the limit.
Am I correct in saying you swap the battery out of the supervan to do consistent laps and things like that? Is that the way it works? You don't have a big charger there. You just swap the battery out?
No. We charge it.
Wow.
We don't swap the battery. We just have the same one. And that's you could do that, right? That's one way of doing it. And maybe you'll get to push it a bit more. But what we wanted to do wasn't necessarily to keep swapping the battery out. We wanted to go through those charge discharge cycles and really learn from when you're discharging that much current constantly and you're recharging it with the regen. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have 800 kilowatts of regen, which is a ridiculous amount of regen.
Whoa.
And so it's like you want those learnings from the constant charge and discharge. And we kept swapping the battery out after each run. I don't think we'd get the same learnings.
So are you optimistic about the EV forecast? Are people going to get it? They're going to see these improvements over the years, and you think adoption rates are going to increase?
It's hard to predict with adoption rates, obviously, because that's so much of consumer sentiment and stuff. But technologically speaking, yeah, they are definitely going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're working on it. What we learned from here, like I said, is ultimately going to feed in. It's just incremental stuff. It's not here we go, I got a great benefit that's going to go right into it. It's not like that. It's so much of just grinding through it, working with a bunch of engineers. It's a lot of hard work, but it is definitely incremental improvements.
Now, just finally, you're obviously an engineer. You've worked in aerodynamics. You've been in this space in motorsport, I assume, for a very long time. Did you ever expect that you would be living in a world and working in a job where you were part of a team that is racing an electric van to set lap records at tracks around the world. And I can imagine a few tracks, Sri, that you're aiming for. This is wild, isn't it?
It's absolutely wild. It is a crazy. It almost feels like a made up job sometimes. It's like, wait, you want to combine Formula One and crazy 2,000 horsepower demonstrators? Yeah, of course.
Let me think. Okay.
Yeah, sign me up.
Well, it's an awesome program. The thing looks spectacular. The laps look great. Some of the onboards, the offboards, everything from Bathurst and the weekend were amazing. So congratulations on what you're doing. I look forward to seeing where you go. I can imagine some large racing circuits in the European area that you would be begging to set lap times at. But let's not speculate.
Yep. Yeah, but... I will be, slapped on the wrist if I say any more on that, but I'll just leave you with we're all complete race car nuts here. We're all racers. So, yeah, expect cool things.
Good on you, Sri. Really appreciate your time. Hope you enjoyed the laps that you got to do with the vehicle in Australia. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, mate.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Cheers, mate. Thanks very much. What a legend. And, I think that's what's really cool about it is, Stephen, you've got this concept of, and we've always had concept cars at motor shows that showed what design might be. And then you had always had some cars pushing the limit.
Yeah.
And as a rev head for life, cars, motorsport has always trickled down technology.
Yeah,
whether
of course.
Whether it's
Formula One,
buttons on steering, traction control, for example.
Right.
The traction control that we have, the anti-lock braking, things like that may have been developed within or I guess, enhanced through motorsport.
Yeah.
And here we are now with battery technology. I actually thought that was a swap-in, swap-out battery.
Yeah.
And so the fact that they charge and discharge that thing,
he's
right. So you're learning.
You need to learn the discharge as well as the
after
charge.
After 15 laps, we get 15 charge full
Absolutely,
cycles. We've got X efficiency gain or loss, right?
I want to know what tracks you're thinking of. What was it Nürburgring?
Well, now that he's on the line, the Nürburgring has to be their goal.
So even I knew that. Were you impressed with that? Not
yeah, 100%, mate. Well done. Because, see, everyone, like you've seen the reports of Porsche and Tesla doing these laps and things. There's no doubt that they're probably doing these laps of places like Bathurst and Albert Park because, so Bathurst, for example, that part across the top, twisty and turny, there's nothing like it at Nürburgring, but there's certainly twisty, turny short bits and then there's really long straights. There's some learnings they would have got out of Bathurst that would allow them to feed into, their estimates. Because the thing about Nürburgring is there's a number you've got to hit and you can't go there and not hit it. You've pretty much got to go there knowing that you're going to break the record.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what was the point of doing it?
That's normally the track I choose first because it's easier than some other ones. Like when I won the Formula One game, Monte Carlo is really hard, but Nürburgring, let me at it.
It's a different circuit in the Formula One track.
Yeah.
The one they're going to do is the one I did when I was over there. It's like, is it 10 or 20 kilometres? It's a really long piece of road.
Right,
it's the Nordschleife.
So it's different to the Formula One.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's the one. You remember a couple of years ago, Tesla had their Plaid
and
they claimed all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it turned out that it was a Plaid that was also different tyres, different everything. It wasn't the real car.
Yeah.
It's the benchmark in motorsport.
Okay.
So I suspect in the next 12 months we're going to hear the Ford Supervan setting records.
Some Ford claims. That's great.
Yeah. Great stuff and fascinating as well. All right, you've been listening to Two Blokes Talking Electric Cars. Thank you to NRMA Insurance and Union and Dash Cams. We'll be back again next week with another episode, Stephen.
See you then.